Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich from Crime Talk. Let's get straight to the docket. First, a police cover-up. That's right, the Daniel Prude case, a case update. Second, Lori Vallow, she wants a joint trial with her husband, and her husband doesn't want a joint trial. That ought to be interesting. Third, a Pennsylvania couple arrested for horrifying case against their son. Fourth, look at what just washed up on the beach. Our cold case of the day, as well as our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich. Thanks for watching. First, if you haven't done so already, we'd ask that you hit that subscribe button, hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live. And you would have wanted that last night because why? You heard it here first about the Lori Vallow, Chad DeBell case update, which we'll talk about in a minute. And as always, leave us a comment below about what we talk about here today. Well, let's talk about the Daniel Prude case. This was the case out of Rochester, New York. And although when the videos first came out about this particular incident, it was a little bit dated. And now we know why. Apparently, the city attorneys and the police chief and possibly even the mayor, who is noted as being in the loop, were doing everything they could not to release the facts and the videotape. When this case first came out, it was reported, obviously, that Daniel Prude was found naked running through the streets of Rochester, New York. The autopsy report stated that he died of asphyxiation and that he had PCP and a little bit of a cocktail of other substances in his body. I thought, obviously not a good case, but they're certainly going to say that it was drug related. As we've always stated here on Crime Talk, we have the facts. And we have what we believe based upon those facts. And when the facts change, our analysis will change. Why? That's called being intellectually honest. That's what you have to do. You can't ignore the facts. Well, it turns out the reason why the video wasn't released and the documents were late in being reported was because the police were literally trying to cover this up. A 300-page report has come out regarding this particular incident, and wait till you hear some of these facts. Daniel Prude had died of suffocation back in March after police officers had placed this hood over him and they'd actually pinned him on the ground. The public had never really heard about this case because the body cam footage really never got out. There are emails where it states, quote, "We certainly do not want people to misinterpret the officer's actions and conflate this incident with any recent killings of unarmed black men by law enforcement nationally." That was written by a deputy Rochester police chief writing to his boss. The email goes on and says that would simply be a false narrative and could create animosity and potentially violent blowback in this community as a result. So the police were aware of what was taking place. The advice that was being given was clear. Don't release the body cam footage to the Prude's family's lawyer. And the police chief replied 1 minute later, "I totally agree." Now, as you may recall, the Rochester Police Department police chief resigned and said that he was going to leave at the end of the month. And the mayor ultimately said no. Police Chief LaRon Singletary, you can leave now. Many of these emails in the report highlight internal reviews, an actual delay tactics from citing hospital privacy laws to blaming an overworked employee's backlog in processing videos. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the type of thing as a criminal defense attorney I've been dealing with for years. Do I want the police defunded? No. Do we need transparency when it comes to not just the police, but all government officials? Absolutely, because these are the games that they play, and they hope that people just give up, grow tired, and go away. The documents that were released in this report show that the police actually attempted to frame the narrative in the earliest hours, playing up Mr. Prude's potential for danger and glossing over the tactics of the officers who pinned him naked and hooded to the ground before he stopped breathing. In the police report on the confrontation, there's a box for marking of a victim type. An officer in the scene listed Mr. Prude, who the police believed had broken a store window that night, simply as an individual. But another officer circled the word in red and scribbled a note, "Make him a suspect." So back on April 10th, the county medical examiner released its autopsy findings, and the conclusion was that Mr. Prude's death was a homicide from asphyxia and noting the PCP in his system. Chief Singletary wrote a summary of the incident. Officers did stabilize the individual on the ground for Justin Raj, the city communications director. "The mayor has been in the loop," the chief wrote then. Mayor Warren had said she was not told of the struggle with the officers that preceded Mr. Prude's cardiac arrest, only that he had suffered a drug overdose. On April 21st, the state attorney general's office had been informed about the incident from local officials, and they opened up a death investigation. Days later, though, the Rochester Police Department concluded in its own investigation that the officers' actions and conduct displayed when dealing with Prude appear to be appropriate and consistent with their training and internal report noted. In late May, Mr. Shields, the Prude's family lawyer, began following up on his open records request, saying that the deadline to hand over the material had lapsed. But officials in the Rochester Police Department were increasingly reluctant to turn the video over to the attorney. The deputy police chief, an individual by the name of Mark Simmons, wrote in emails that he was concerned about blowback from the public. A police lieutenant by the name of Michael Perkowski stated in an email, "I am very concerned about releasing this prematurely in light of what's going on in Rochester and around the country." A lawyer for the city wrote in an email, "I may be overthinking, but would think the chief's office and the mayor's office would want a heads up before this goes out." Ultimately, city officials found a way to keep the video from going public. They basically said that in light of the attorney general's inquiry, we cannot release the video because of an ongoing investigation. Ultimately, the video was released on September 2nd, and the response was exactly what people had feared. There was rioting in Rochester. Mr. Simmons, the deputy chief who urged the video not be released, was demoted to a lieutenant last week, and that demotion didn't last long. On Monday, he was named acting police chief. And as stated, ladies and gentlemen, we do not need police covering up. We need open fairness. We need the truth to come out. And this type of situation is what hinders people's trust in the government when they think that there are two sets of rules that apply, one for government officials and one for everybody else. Why these people are in office and have no responsibility for any of this action is beyond me. When the police chief notes that the mayor is involved and in the loop, clearly, she knew what was going on. Now she denies completely that I didn't know the full story. Well, guess what? You're the mayor. You had somebody die on your watch. The buck stops with you. But yet, none of these mayors or police chiefs anywhere are, in fact, resigning. And I will support the police. No one is saying that they need to be defunded. Absolutely not. What I'm saying is we need good policing. We need open, honest policing. When people make mistakes, they need to be held accountable. Can you think of any other industry, any other profession where mistakes are never made? I can't think of one. Somehow, for over the years, politicians think they never made any mistakes, and if they did, it's not their fault. And forever, the police were always justified. As a defense attorney, I have dealt with these delays, people hiding, delaying, releasing of records. It needs to stop. People need trust in their state and local officials. And the only way they can do that is that they be held accountable when they are hiding evidence. Next on the docket, Lori Vallow wants a joint trial. Only problem for her may be that her husband doesn't want a joint trial. As you may recall, ladies and gentlemen, the prosecution has filed a motion for joinder. We've talked about this over the last several weeks and what it in fact really means. And late last night, guess what appears on the court filings? That's right. A notice of non-objection regarding motion for joinder. Lori Vallow, through her attorney, filed a simple motion, and it said that comes now the defendant, Lori Vallow, and provides notice that she does not object to the motion for joinder filed by the plaintiff on or about September 1st, 2020. That's the motion filed by the district attorney. Now, you may recall her husband objected to the motion for joinder. So this is going to be interesting. I think we have the inconsistent theory of defenses already coming about. Now, we talked about this a little bit last night on our live program, and if you missed it, you can go back and watch the video, but let me give you it in a nutshell. If there's going to be a joint trial, one of the ways to not have a joint trial is to say that you're going to point fingers at each other. I personally think that Mr. Means, Lori Vallow's attorney, is not that good. Mr. Pryor, Chad DeBell's attorney, is good. I think Mr. Means wants to be there to simply say, me too. Yep, whatever Mr. Pryor said, me too, on behalf of my client. I also believe that Mr. Pryor, on behalf of his client, Chad DeBell, wants to take a theory of defense of what is commonly referred to as in the criminal defense area as the Sergeant Schultz defense. I know nothing. I know nothing. I don't know how those children's remains got there. I had no idea what this woman and her brother, Eric, were up to, and that simply you can't convict me because I had no idea what they did. You can't very well do that if you got the co-defendant sitting next to you. That is why the motion for an objection to the joinder has been filed by Chad DeBell, and I believe that that will be supplemented, and I think it will be clear that they have inconsistent theories of defenses. So we shall see how this plays out. Wouldn't you love to see them at the table themselves, seeing how they interact at the defense table during the trial? Now, and on one other note, it appears as though the jury trial date has been changed for Lori Vallow. Her jury trial is set to take place now between March 22nd and April 2nd. It's unclear what exactly was the basis for this to take place, but that's fine, and I think it may not even matter if there is, in fact, a joint trial. We'll have to wait and see. There's been all kinds of surprises in this case, and literally every day, just when you think there's nothing to talk about, bam, somebody files something, and there you go. Quick recess, ladies and gentlemen, before we get to the rest of the docket. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for your background subscription service. Yes, there is a fee, but guess what? You can cancel at any time. There's no long-term contracts at all. But when you sign up, guess what? You can search as many people as you want, and you can do it anonymously. And you will get a report literally generated while you wait that will include all kinds of information. Most importantly, it's going to have information related to criminal background searches. It's going to have property records, marital records. You're going to get information that shows what cell phone numbers are associated with this particular individual that you're searching, what email addresses are associated with them, as well as social media information related to the person that you are searching. And you get to do it all anonymously. Information is power, ladies and gentlemen. If you have a doubt with whom you are dealing with in life, whether it's somebody you're dating, maybe somebody you're getting to know, maybe something just doesn't feel right, guess what? Do a criminal background search on them. At least it'll give you peace of mind. The cost is worth it. We use this every day in my law firm. We're always looking for information on potential witnesses. We know that there's something else out there. It's a matter of finding it. Go to crimetalksearch.com. Sign up today. You'll be happy you did. Next on the docket, a Pennsylvania couple has been arrested for a horrific case against their 12-year-old son. A Pennsylvania couple was arrested for the alleged torture and the murder of their 12-year-old son after he was found dead living in horrific conditions, according to the Lebanon County District Attorney's Office. Police officers responded to a report of a deceased child. And when they responded, they found a 12-year-old Maxwell Schollenberger at the residence on South White Oak Street. When the police arrived, they looked into the bedroom And young Max was found deceased, naked in a second floor bedroom, completely covered with fecal matter. There were claw marks on the sheets in the stained feces. A moldy fecal matter was reportedly found underneath the bed. The bedroom had no other furniture and window shades were taped to the window frames and the doors were screwed shut. The two suspects admitted they used the hooks to lock the victim inside the room. Scott Schollenberger is the boy's biological father. Kimberly Maurer, engaged to the father, acted as the victim's mother for the past decade. The couple has other biological children together who live in the same house. These children were apparently reported to be relatively healthy. The other children told the detectives about the stench that emanated from Max's bedroom and how the couple refused to let him out of his room. One child specifically remembered the couple would enter the boy's room and Max would scream and cry. The forensic autopsy listed starvation and malnutrition and multiple blunt force traumas throughout the child's head, face, and body. The 12-year-old boy only weighed 47 pounds. Police have been able to determine that Max had never registered for or attended school and had not received medical care since he was 2 years old. The other children reported not seeing Max for quite some time. The district attorney has charged Scott Schollenberger and Kimberly Maurer with criminal homicide, conspiracy to commit criminal homicide, endangering the welfare of a child, and conspiracy to commit endangering the welfare of a child. These are the worst type of cases. I've said this before. If you are a parent, you have one duty in life, and that is to protect your children. And if you can't do it, there's certainly other ways of making sure these children are going to be cared for than locking them up and not feeding the child. These two people, I dare say parents, are going to go away to prison for the rest of their lives where they belong. They certainly shouldn't be allowed to ever care for a child ever, ever again. Next on the docket, look what washed ashore on the beach. The only question is whose is it? That's right. A man was walking along the shores of Lake Michigan Tuesday morning in Wisconsin, and the beachcomber out on his daily stroll came across a square package of aluminum foil held together by a pink rubber band. The curiosity got the best of the man, and he opened up the package. At first, the man was not sure what he had just found, but then he realized he wasn't holding a chicken breast, but he was in fact holding something similar that looked like noodles. The man immediately called the police so that they could investigate what he had just found, and the Racine County medical examiner tells the police the brain is not human. It appears that it may have actually come from a cat. But the question becomes, why is it floating around in the ocean wrapped up the way it was, and who would have done such a thing? At least we didn't have someone like our dumb criminal contestant of the day yesterday gnawing on it, saying that it tasted like Laffy Taffy. Next on the docket, our cold case of the day. And ladies and gentlemen, we are doing these cold cases because somewhere, someone has information regarding these cases. These people, particularly cold cases where there's a John Doe or a Jane Doe, they deserve to have their truth and their story told. Somewhere, someone knows anything. Listen carefully, and hopefully someone out there can provide information to the police to help solve this mystery. So our cold case of the day goes back to March 21st, 1984, when skeletal remains were discovered in a wooden area west of a Little League baseball field in what is now SeaTac near Burien, south of Washington. The unidentified white Caucasian female was a victim of serial killer Gary Leon Ridgway, who confessed and pleaded guilty in 2004 to murdering a young woman near the baseball fields off Des Moines Way. Now, Ridgway is serving life in prison in Washington, and the remains of another victim, Cheryl Wims, was found at the same time. However, forensic investigators determined that the girl was between 12 and 18 years of age and stood about 5 feet, 5 inches tall, and was about 120 pounds, and that she was likely left-handed. She had died by strangulation a year or more prior to being found. If anyone has any information regarding this Jane Doe, please contact the King County Sheriff's Office and ask for Detective Sergeant Tony McNabb at area code 206-263-2090. Someone, somewhere, has information that can help identify the remains of this woman. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Now, some people don't like the word dumb criminal contestant. Some people believe that it means that they're deaf. No, there's multiple meanings to the word dumb, and sometimes it just means they do stupid things. So let's meet Mr. Herbert McClellan. He is accused of swiping more than a dozen scratch-off lottery tickets from a local speedway, then trying to cash in a winning ticket at the same store. Police allege that Mr. McClellan strolled into the convenience store around 2 a.m. on Tuesday, and while the worker behind the counter was caught up doing something else, Mr. McClellan reached over and took 13 different scratch-off tickets worth approximately $100. Mr. McClellan then slipped out of the store, but apparently couldn't wait to see if any of his tickets were in fact winners. One was. It was the amount of $30, and so a few hours later, he showed back up with the same speedway to cash it in, and per the police, in a Facebook post, the Clearwater PD notes, "That's when store workers called us and we arrested him." According to jail records, Mr. McClellan was charged with petty theft, dealing with stolen property, and driving with a suspended license for the second time. It's safe to say that this was not his lucky day, according to the police. Now, Mr. McClellan, if you'd listened to and watched Crime Talk, you would know this is not uncommon. People return to the scene of the crime. You shouldn't do that. We've had people that have robbed the store and then come back to basically get the same product that they had stolen. You shouldn't do that. So, Mr. McClellan, we're not trying to disparage you in any way, but you are a dumb criminal contestant of the week. Congratulations. And if you win, that's right, you will receive, at no cost to you, that's right, you don't have to steal it, we will send you a Crime Talk mug if you are the dumb criminal contestant. Now, if you would like to get some Crime Talk merchandise, and there's some new stuff going up, hit the link below, order it, and you will have it shortly. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let me know. Do you think there was a police cover-up in the Daniel Prude case, or do I have it all wrong? Lori Vallow, do you think there's going to be a bitter fight about a joint trial now? And why can anyone be a parent, but you still need to go get a license to go fishing? I just don't get it. And finally, let us know what else is on your mind by leaving a comment below. That's all we have for you today on Crime Talk. Thanks for watching. We appreciate you taking the time to be with us.